And we are running low on time here on What's Left. That was a teeny, teeny, tiny bit of our senator. I know he's a senator from Vermont, but he's our senator. Bernie Sanders from December 2nd. Before that was a tiny, tiny clip from, or rather a whole piece from, Charlie King and Karen Brandow. One more track from The Distance Remaining, their new CD. The track was called Plegiarias, Prayers. And that was performed by Karen Brandow, Frankie Paul with a little Merry Christmas medley, and Christ for President from Billy Bragg and Wilco from the Mermaid Avenue album. Indeed, we're just about gone. The views and opinions expressed on this program have been those of the participants and not necessarily the staff and management of WMBR, the Technology Broadcasting Corporation, or the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. I believe we'll be back next week. Stay tuned for Music for Human Beings coming up in a few. This is WMBR in Cambridge, and it seems sensible to end with this.
Hi, folks. Welcome back to The Satellite. As a special treat, Crow, Tom, and I have written and are going to perform an original Christmas carol.
Mike, it's not just for Christmas. It's for holidays of all faiths.
Yeah, right. Don't call it a carol, because carol is a woman's name, and we want this song to be all-inclusive.
Right. Why don't you hit a camera? There we go.
Let us all now sing our praises to the Lord today. Although you may not share our belief system, which is perfectly okay.
Maybe you worship an abstract being that is kind of vague. Or maybe you just worship a guy whose name is Greg.
Perhaps your religion doesn't include a time called Lent, but whatever your religion is, we support you 100%.
So sit around the fire and have a chestnut roast, or raise a glass in toast to happy days, Donnymost.
But if you prefer to eat Indian food on Christmas Day, I can only shrug my shoulders and say no. Namaste, namaste.
Personally, I prefer turkey, gravy, and salad. But let's never forget, all cultures are valid.
So let's have peace on earth and cut out all the bull. Let's have a holiday season that's multicultural.
If there's one point we'd like to make with this festive holiday song,
it's that Christmas comes just once a year, so for a few days, for crying out loud, can we all just get along?
Hey.
Wow.
That was actually pretty good.
That was great. It was lovely. Good job. Very nice.
Thank you.
Marhaban. Marhaban on this cold, cold evening. It is so cold. I'm Dr. Jalis Sakran, and I welcome you. I'm pleased to be joined this evening by tea drinker Dave. Dave, welcome.
Thanks.
Dave, how are you staying cold this evening?
It's a welcome change from California. California's always warm. You don't feel the difference in the seasons, and it's... you feel the passage of time here.
Like the whale, Dave, you remain warm internally.
Absolutely.
We are also welcomed by Steve, the music theorist. Steve, welcome.
Hi, it's good to be here.
And Steve, are you also cold?
Right now I'm okay.
We just passed the winter solstice, and like all solstices, what happens is the Earth's magnetic field becomes aligned with that of the moon. The result is an effect called animal magnetism. And so to celebrate this, I felt this evening it would be appropriate to be listening to moon music.
Absolutely.
Okay. Steve, tell us a little about moon music.
Moon music? Well, to me, moon music is something that transports you, that takes you away out of the moment. Kind of like a lover's caress.
That really captures you. There's some darkness there also.
Moves you on a visceral level.
Yes. And you can't be moved on a visceral level without embracing the darkness of your animal nature.
Yeah, I think there is a lot to what you say, Steve. But like the moon, there is a pale and cold light to that animal nature.
I think it's a misnomer that you classify something as dark or bad. I think they're different colors of who we are.
Yeah, I appreciate that a lot, Dave. And I think that perhaps the problem is how we use the word dark, because dark does not necessarily mean evil.
Yeah, we have different facets of who we are. We are not always a bright and shiny person. Just like summer is bright, warm, winter is dark, but not in a bad way. It's who we are.
It just is dark. It is, and we should, like we embrace the lightness and the brightness, we should also, I think, there is a lesson to be learned in embracing the darkness, dark hood.
Yeah, we can't hide the different parts of ourselves. If we do, it's going to come out in some way that may not be as welcoming.
Right.
If you embrace who you are in the darkness, in the moonlight, then you may find yourself in a different place in the summertime, too.
It's true. A better place. There is no light without dark.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, and I wonder what sort of manifestations that darkness might take. If a person is burying their darkness, what is the extent to which this can have a negative effect?
I feel it's almost like you take a water balloon, a very You know, a water balloon is if you push down on one part of it. If you push too hard, if you don't appease that darkness side of you, it'll come out in a different way, a way that you're not expecting. Say, for example, you become more passive-aggressive as opposed to just saying that, right now I feel sad, I feel dark. I wouldn't necessarily say sad at times. Sometimes it could be melancholy. You know, you embrace the sadness part of you, but it's like you go through it. You just let it flow through you as opposed to trying to block it. If you do, it's going to come out as something that you're going to lash out at someone you love.
I think you're right, but if you're going to let it flow through you, you still have to control it. I mean, that doesn't mean blocking it, but you have to be, you know,
I think
control
you have a point.
Yourself.
Yeah, as opposed to letting it completely flow through, you channel it to something. As an artist will paint something, a programmer will program something, you got to find a way to let this energy flow through you in a positive manner and not really push this anger or harshness onto people that you love, as opposed to you can pull love and joy off of friends around you when you are feeling maybe less or sad.
Yeah, I like this image a lot. I think that perhaps the simplest analogy would be a person who consumes food, finding it sweet and delicious, but refuses to excrete anything because of the violent and the foul nature of the excrement. But obviously this is a problem, and you know what the... The consequence of this is storing and becoming a bag of excrement,
exactly.
Ultimately.
Yes, yes.
And really the point is that the person simply needs to find a place where it is appropriate to dispose of these internal things and to dispose of it appropriately. And I think the natural state of a person is to be completely empty.
Yes.
Spiritual toilet, if you will.
I think this is a very appropriate analogy, actually. I think in spite of the toilety nature of the obvious toilety nature. But I think sometimes that I experience a bit of unrest when someone gives me food, because I know that there is this secondary elimination process that must occur.
Exactly. There's always an out with an in. I mean, why is it that it's such a vulgar thing to even say toilet? Mm. You think about when you go to something like France and they'll say, I got to use the toilet. I mean, over here we say, we got to go to the bathroom, which is...
I need the restroom.
Yeah, exactly.
As though I'm going to rest there.
Yeah.
Which is quite ludicrous. And I think similarly that when a person comes to me in the solstice and says, as a gift, I will consume your food on your behalf, there is some gratefulness on my part because he is giving me the gift of fasting.
Yes,
of not needing, of not requiring any excretions. Well, as always, if you would like to give us the gift of taking the air from us so that there must not later be the consequent air excrement, then join us at 617-253-8810, and we have two lines available. Caller, welcome.
Hello. Namaste.
Marhaban, caller. Is that Aurora with us?
It is. I am calling in from the deep and glorious jungles of Florida.
And it's so wonderful to hear your voice coming from there. Aurora, tell us about your experience and the coldness that you have found in the jungle.
Well, it is, of course, very difficult to find adequate coldness this time of year at such a location. It is, of course, beautiful and sunny, and so one must draw within oneself to locate the darkness, to locate the cold. And I must say that today I had such a glorious experience. So love to share with you all.
Oh, no, please. I would love to hear about that, Aurora.
Well, I was walking along a sort of stream that I found deep in the forest. And for those of you who have never been to Florida, to this area, it is such thick, uncultured wilderness. It's beautiful because there are creatures all around you. There are little bugs flying around, partaking in your energy, alligators, all sorts of things. And today I was sitting on a rock near a tree, eating my sandwiches. And along came a little armadillo, which is this lovely shelled creature. And he looked at me as if to say, "Hello, I am with you. I am amongst you." And he sat and he ate his bugs next to me as I ate my sandwich.
Beautiful.
Aurora, I love this story because to me, there is always a mockery when I see the warmth and I'm in December, because it is an irony that nature seems to be saying, even when you expect death and winter here outside, the only death, the only winter is in your body. And it is sort of a cork preventing me from excreting the winter that I possess. But you find a way of finding death and winter even in this glorious sunshine experience. You experience death with these insects that are being consumed all around you.
They are much the spiritual fiber of our being.
Precisely. It's a very, very beautiful philosophy.
I'm happy that you found winter in such a warm spot.
Me too.
And I'm happy that you all can experience winter in such a physical and visceral fashion.
And Aurora, I'm curious also if you could tell us about the consequences that if you feel the magnetic alignment as we have felt it. I'm not sure if you were hearing our earlier discussion.
Yes, I was unfortunately unable to follow it as I have no internet in this location. But yes, I noticed today, actually, that my sense of time and space has been unstable recently. And I think if our listeners and those of you who are in the studio at the moment consider your recent history, that perhaps time has been flowing in a strange manner for all of us.
You mean non-linearly?
Well, time is always non-linear. Those of us who sleep deeply do not experience time. You experience those 8 hours as if they are perhaps 5 minutes. But it is probably linear now.
I see.
So everything is ordered and flowing like water out of a very large opening, as opposed to water out of a very narrow opening.
Yes.
There is, instead of having too much life to live in a brief amount of time, we have very little life and several days to experience it all.
Yes.
Which I think is such a common phenomenon in the winter.
Yeah, that's strange. It's very weird.
Well, winter is like nature falling asleep for 8 hours. Is it 3 months or is it only 5 minutes? Who's to say?
And yet I've always felt that winter is the longest season. It seems that the experience is always drawn out in comparison with the other months. Maybe that's a consequence of living in Boston, where the winter seems to stretch on interminably from one year to another and halting only for 4 weeks in August for where the sun appears to land in Boston and then depart again, returning to another galaxy.
I've noticed that, yeah.
One is fine in these dark, long winters, as opposed to living in Florida, where you need to find your inner cold. In Boston, I believe it is a necessity to reach out to your inner warmth, to allow the sun to embrace you from within, as it cannot from without.
And I think that's why such beautiful art is created in Boston, because there is a need to empty oneself to find the winter. There is a sense of balance there.
You know, I've actually had a chance to, I had the privilege of going over to Hawaii, where I was speaking to a native, and he was telling me about eucalyptus trees. And originally, eucalyptus trees were brought over just so that they were really good wood and they could be used to build houses. But the problem is about eucalyptus trees is that they need a cold winter in order to develop a hard wood. Otherwise, they're just this very loose wood that's inside of it. And it's, I think that is just evidence of how important the passage of time is and how important this winter is and how we need these, we need to build our strong rings.
Well, and this is so beautifully expressed. This is such a great analogy for what happens to many of us deep inside in this society. We feel as if we do not deserve to feel emotions that we truly do feel. We do not allow ourselves to truly feel misery, to feel wronged, to feel these negative feelings. As we can see from the term negative, they are not negative, they are simply feelings. And if we do not express them, they build up within and cause us to, for example, shoot people.
Yes. Yeah, and I'd like to share an extended metaphor which actually happened about a person that I knew who, over time, was extremely sweet, sweet like perhaps sweeter than honey.
Butterscotch.
Butterscotch, who was about 98% refined sugar. The result was a sweetness which became almost unbearable. And I found later that he had consumed and kept within him every particle of bitterness, and simply became a bitter ball which exploded in the following way. Eventually he began, and this was the extent to which he was able to separate bitterness from his extremely saccharine sweetness. And I use saccharine, but it is metaphorical, obviously not actually saccharine. And the result was that his personality split into a dual thing. He became two people, and we were forced eventually to deal psychologically and surgically remove the other personality.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, they were inextricably tied. Yeah, that is all.
That person needs to find a balance between these dualities.
It's true.
Find out how they can coexist.
Life without balance is a life not worth living.
Absolutely. And I think, I mean, to make the metaphor more explicit, he died.
Well, and I would not necessarily say that life without balance is not worth living. I believe that bipolarism works for many people. Excess exuberance and cheerfulness for periods of time followed by periods of despair, while unorthodox, allows people to express themselves in a sort of sinusoidal fashion.
Maybe it's some sort of extreme balance.
You know, actually, Aurora, I really believe you have a point there. I believe that there's a lot of artistic expression that has really been brought out by bipolarism. I mean, I don't, in a way, I think it's unhealthy psychologically, but I mean, you can actually express yourself in some profound way, because as a person becomes on the manic mode, they start really going at it. They start creating things in such a way where they may work for days on end.
It's true.
Yeah, I think...
I must say, I'm sorry to interrupt, but I am faced with a rattlesnake at the moment, I think. Actually, probably not a rattlesnake. I must go.
Grab it by the head.
Well, thank you so much, Aurora, for joining us, and hopefully you are able to consume the snake, resulting in a restoration of the natural balance. Anyone else who would like to join in, if anyone is there, the number is 617-253-8810. And it's so important for us, I think, also to have balance, because we speak, and often I think we wish to be listening instead of speaking.
We are pushing out. We're waiting for the flow to come back to us.
Precisely, and I think there is an excess of emptiness that results,
yeah.
which I admire. But mostly, I'm curious if anyone does eat honey by itself
regularly.
Not just with tea.
Not simply with tea, as I'm sure you do, Dave.
There are times to drink honey, have honey with your tea, but for the most part, you need to respect the tea.
Noted.
Thank you.
And Steve, I wonder if honey also plays a part in music, because, of course, it plays an integral part in science.
Well... I think with regards to music, we're always, looking for the honey. We're always, we play the next note mm-hmm. in the hopes that the note after it will be the honey note. And every once in a while, we find the honey note.
Is that a technical term?
Not yet. But I'm working on my own, music theoretical approach, and I want to incorporate the honey note as a central tenet of
New Age music theory.
Yes, mm. That's right.
And how long has it been that you've been developing this? Because I've heard other attempts to develop a New Age musical theory.
Well, I don't think you can think of it in terms of how long you've been searching for it. I mean, the search started long before I was born, and will carry on long after I'm gone. It is ever-ending.
Yeah, you're part of an ancient spiritual tradition. I think the problem with these traditions is that often there is an excess of heat and wind,
mm.
and it's important to find balance.
Well, like we said earlier, I think the cold and dark can be within, so we create the heat and wind without through our music to find the balance.
And I recall there was, I think, a Euclidean attempt to classify music according to the Platonic solids.
Mm.
And this might be apocryphal, but I'm vaguely remembering a tying the elements with the tonalities of music and also with the planets and the Platonic solids.
The problem with the what you're referring to is his notation was often written on parchment in the shape of octagons. And while, his heart was in the right place, the musicians simply couldn't read the notation.
And the traditional method now is to use
rectangles.
Rectangular notation.
Yes.
It's one of these things that is very difficult to decode, the octagonal.
It is. The rectangle seems much more spiritual, much more balanced.
Hmm.
And let's take a moment, I think, to really listen to what's going on here musically. So I hear some wind vaguely, which I did not notice before.
Some birds in there too.
There's a whale, and there is some stringing
harp.
Is this rectangular music, Steve?
This music sounds very circular to me, actually.
Very circular.
Very circular, yes.
Which is in the old tradition, it's the priestly
Exactly. Shamanistic. It never starts, it never ends. It just carries on, much like the search for the honey note.
The honey note, which... Who can say?
Who can say?
But there may be a natural resonance frequency for the person.
Person to person or just in general?
For each particular person.
So what you're saying is maybe your honey note is different than my honey note?
Seems possible. It's a theory only. As we all know, the Earth has a natural resonance frequency which we are playing throughout the program at 7.9 hertz. It's very low frequency, but if you focus on that frequency, you might be able to just feel a rumble in your
Earth's honey note.
The Earth's honey note.
I think I can feel it.
And it's pretty much what gives our program its quality.
I see. The Earth's honey note.
Yeah. The three of us have been discussing what might be appropriate. What's the right move now? And we would like to do a guided meditation. So if anyone would like to call and join in, help us steer the meditation. The number is 617-253-8810. Is that Aurora again?
Hello.
Yes. Welcome back, Aurora.
Thank you. I just wish to, if any of you were suspense, to tell you that everything is okay now.
And were you able to consume the reptile?
Well, it's funny. It turned out to be an alligator who had run into my maracas, hence the confusion.
Understandable. And I'm told the alligator actually has an excellent flavor.
Well, I've never personally partaken in one, but yes, they are said to be the chicken of the sea.
I thought that was tuna.
Well, tuna is the chicken in the sea.
Yeah,
but I the think alligator is the chicken might be
of the swamp.
Of the swamp, yes.
Of the swamp.
That's right.
Yeah, we have a similar saying in Arabic regarding horses. So, Aurora, we were about to embark on a guided meditation, and I was wondering if you would like to join us and just help steer that meditation to a quiet place.
That would be lovely. Is there any way for me to hear the music?
Yeah. I think that can be arranged. Can you hear it now, Aurora?
Yes, I can.
Excellent. So Aurora, I think the four of us, it would be excellent, and any of our listeners, if you could just, especially now, we should make exception for anyone that is driving, that please do not embark on the meditation with us, but simply witness it, because it can be dangerous to leave behind your corpus, your corporeal body, mm-hmm. and spiritually explore while you are driving. But I think to start, let us close our eyes and begin breathing with our feet. Just imagine air moving in and out of your toes. And then the air slowly freezes your toes. And then the freezing air moves up into the rest of the... I do not remember the name of the feet parts, but the rest of them moving southward.
Yeah.
Towards the heel. And then it turns, it rotates, and begins to move westward towards the face, starting with the ankle of the foot, moving slowly, and then suddenly in a rush you are completely frozen. You find that you are trapped in a block of ice. You can just imagine that, because obviously looking around you, if you open your eyes for a moment just to remember, you are not frozen, unless you are, but you are not. So imagine that you are frozen in a block of ice, with only the moon shining above you in the sea. But I guess that would mean that you are frozen in an iceberg. You are waiting, able only to move your lips and your eyes. You begin to pray because you realize that very soon you will die.
All you can see is this eternity of stars above you as you silently float in the ocean.
And then a ship crashes into your iceberg.
And your perspective shifts from the eternity of stars to the very real, very happening right now in front of you.
The iceberg begins to rock slowly. So you see the sea and then the stars and the sea and the stars. Your rotating berg. Suddenly you see that your iceberg has made a very large hole in the ship. So instead of the ship rescuing you, you have destroyed the ship.
And you will not be lonely in the eternity which you are heading towards.
And you feel the cold creeping through your limbs as they go numb. Your consciousness and your soul becomes in your face, as it is the only thing left.
Suddenly you are consumed by an unquenchable thirst, which is ironic because you are surrounded by water. You wonder, looking around, how it is that you might consume any of the water and actually not be thirsty later, because salt water obviously would simply make you more thirsty rather than less thirsty. As you wonder this, a bug crawls across your face, and you reach out with your lips and you pierce its skin and you drink its juice, and that is how your thirst is quenched. And because of your willingness to do this, you die a lot. Everyone else dies first. So you're alone again.
Yeah. And you must die alone, as we all do.
But then you are rescued. And I think this would be a good place to end our meditation.
Moving.
That was lovely.
It's wonderful to me to have that image of being rescued in just a pile of you know, just all these people around, and being stuck in an iceberg. And of course there would be a very lengthy recovery time, probably losing several limbs, but there is that image of that moment where you actually think that you might survive. And it's very worthwhile to hold on to that feeling. And then, of course, eventually to let it go so that you remain empty.
Yes, because... Yeah.
Because you must be empty.
Well, it's the natural...
cycle.
Yeah.
Yes. In and out.
You are empty and you feel yourself and you are empty again.
feeling very empty right now, as a matter of fact.
Stephen, tell us, have you been eating?
Yes.
And I find that some foods leave me feeling more empty than others.
This is true. I mean, especially Chinese.
As I remember, Dr. Dallas, you have a very large disposition for monosodium glutamate.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I treasure the existence of the compound and also the unusual flavors that it imparts upon food. It seems to enhance every flavor and the consequential lesions that appear on the brain of the person who consumes the quantities that I've consumed. Why do you ask, Aurora?
Does the flavor enhancement reduce or enhance the emptiness?
Yeah, I think it enhances. It always adds emptiness because with the additional flavor, the brain, particularly the skin parts of the brain, desire more. It expects more food. And of course, there isn't any more food.
But there's always more emptiness.
But there is unbounded quantity of emptiness.
So we need
MS. So in the spirit of emptiness, one may pour liberal quantities of monosodium glutamate over all sorts of food.
I'm sorry, Aurora, over...
Oh, right.
Aurora, are you still there?
Aurora has left us
to rejoin the emptiness.
Well, if anyone else would like to relieve us even briefly of our emptiness, the number is 617-253-8810. Let's bring a voice on the air, perhaps, to relieve us slightly. Caller one, welcome, marhaban.
Yes.
Yes, welcome, caller.
Are you talking to me now?
Am I challenging you now?
Are you talking to me now?
Yes.
Well, I mean, I think talking together.
I had some odd feelings about, you know, the honey spot and the honey this that you were
honey
talking
note.
About. The honey note. I'm a tree man, and I cut down trees, and I also prune trees and plant trees. I do good as well as bad.
Mm-hmm.
And I took a tree down last week that had a honeybee nest in it, and I felt extremely bad that I had to kill the nest of the honeybees.
Oh, I can appreciate that feeling.
Because it was, I mean, I don't know, progress, whatever. It had to be done, public safety.
Right.
But I felt, terribly, terribly bad about killing such a bunch of helpful.
I think it's a testament
things.
To who you are to feel pain when you have to take away something such as a hive, a home for honeybees. But there is a balance to this. With these bees moving, they will find a new home. Their hive gone is just a step in the right direction, or I wouldn't say a step in a different direction, I should say.
And I think it's important to find balance for even for the bees, because there has to be a balance of life, and it would be untoward for a group of bees to kill a child. And I think that that you've prevented this, and I think Dave is right. I think it's a very good quality to be attuned, to be able to sense the suffering and to embrace it also.
Yeah, we
to be able to identify with what could be considered frightening or repulsive creatures in wider contexts.
Yeah, but they're all living things, and they're looking for a home. And
the other day, I was eating a salad, and I consumed a portion of it, and then I placed the remainder in a compartment in the snow, which I used to preserve food. And I realized that I was consuming something that was slowly dying. I was consuming these vegetables. And how grotesque it was, in a sense, to be doing this. To these leaves, this lettuce, the tomato, is someone's child, someone's brother.
Yeah,
and I was consuming a portion of it and then returning it to the frozen compartment for preservation.
A part of you believes it's somewhat grotesque, but I think there's also something that it's a part of nature. But these things die and the next thing grows. And
It is a part of nature that, I mean, of course, things come, things go. Things, I guess, are in the way sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't care for what I had to do.
What color did you consume the honey?
Well,
I was not able to tap into the honey, and when I finally got to the end of the log, it seemed that the nest was dry of honey. But in a sense, I mean, there were still the honeybees, but there seemed to be no available honey.
I think you are somewhat affected by it, because you obviously are calling us about it and talking about it. So even that you say it didn't affect you at that time, it does have an impact on you. You started to reflect and think about what it was.
Let's bring a second voice to join in with us. If anyone would like to call and join in, it's 617-253-8810. Caller 2, welcome.
Hello, yes. I'm real
okay,
quick to
I,
step out because I my stutter, so please bear with me.
Okay.
To relieve the other caller somewhat of his pain.
Yes.
I heard catching a mouse. Same time, though. Our understanding of nature, bees and so forth and so on.
Mm-hmm.
When it's their time to reproduce and pollinate, there is nothing that can stop that. Nothing. Nature pretty much programmed them to move on.
Mm.
We are pretty much the only beings that
well, and I think
emotions dictate our actions.
But I think even caller that we delude ourselves, because I think that to a great extent our biology is a force which we cannot fight. We have to learn to, like the point about excrement earlier, that it must be appropriately channeled and not to be simply buried.
Of course.
Let's bring a third voice in to join with us.
Last point.
Hello?
No, you're still with us. Caller 3, are you there?
Last point.
Last
yes.
point.
Yes. Please. And with the emptiness, how I feel with that is us face to face with our blessing of decision. Mm. And if we can just let go of the feeling of being empty and embrace, as you said, and that's truly, in one way, being face to face with yourself and your conscience, your whole being of choice, in one way. And it's very, very elegant. It could be sensual. It could be painful. It can be all that. But you can change one's whole self in that space. And it's a beautiful thing. I mean, but to the other caller, I feel your pain and all that. Same time, though, city, aside from the jungle, we don't live in tune with nature. We invaded it. But rest assured, nature has placed in that mechanisms that when it's their time, nothing can stop that. Nothing. So pray for yourself. Pray for your sensitivity, because that's also a very special blessing, and you're a very special human being. I don't even kill the insects in my house. So I feel your pain, and God bless you, and I love everyone right now on this station.
Thank you, caller. We also love you.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for such an in-depth dialogue that someone can release their mind. Thank you.
Thank you, caller. Thank
I'm
you.
Not alone. Thank you.
And is caller 3 with us?
Hello?
Yes, welcome, caller.
Hi. Namaste.
Namaste. Namaste, caller. Marhaba.
I was listening to everything that you guys have been spoken of, talking of, sharing with everybody. And it caught my attention when you said about how to empty the mind and to let go the emotions and the feelings. And I would love to share a story that of a woman that I met almost 7 years ago, where I had a heartbroken. And this woman was working with me, she was the dishwasher of this small restaurant on the beach in Puerto Rico. And I was suffering with my pain and my reality of love. I'm almost feeling lost because I wasn't anymore with that person I was loving. And suddenly I felt this emotion of like compassion, but not compassion for me, just compassion for things around me. And I asked to that lady what was her story, or you know, why she was here with me working.
Yeah.
And 2 months before she started working there, she was telling me that her two daughters, that one was 14 and I believe the other one was 15 or 16, they both died in a car accident with her father. And the father was alive, but they both died. This woman is next to me for 2 months already.
Yeah.
Just cleaning the dishes. And what a coincidence, the uniform was a black uniform. And I, most of the time I wear black because I'm trying to be in harmonization with the universe.
Yeah, yeah.
And an instrument of the universe, you know?
And see, what you've done for her is you've emptied this out. You'd emptied this out of her. She had this inside of her that she needed to let it go. And
yes.
You've done that for her.
Mm-hmm. And after that, everything was so small for me, you know? All my problems just vanished in the invisible reality that we live every single day.
No, and I love that image, too, because I remember when I was a child how small my world was.
Mm-hmm.
And the problems, things that now I look back and I found them in part of my life to be amusing. The loss of a ball or a toy that seemed massive and crushing to me then. And it's so true that, you know, as your world changes, as the grows and contracts, the problems are different.
Yeah, and
yes.
I think there's a certain point where you hit a precipice where you say, This is what's important for me for the rest of my life. I mean, the way that being there for people, the way that you were there for that woman, it's a point where you say that, you know what, I don't know if there could be more things that are important than family and friends. And
even that, she was there for me, you know?
See that balance that happens to it?
It was amazing.
Yeah. I'm really happy. You got to enjoy it. You got to experience that part of life.
Yes.
Well, unfortunately, the time has contracted around us and we've reached the end of the hour. So thank you so much, caller, for being with us and for sharing the story.
Thank you very much.
Hi.
And thanks to our many callers who called in and that we were unable to get to. Thanks so much to Steve.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you, Steve, for joining us, and thanks also to Dave.
Thanks very much for having me.
This is Dr. Jalis Sakran here on Music for Human, which is New Age Talk Radio with an emphasis on you, here on WMBR Cambridge 88.1 FM. Stay tuned next for Bob DeBro covering for L Train this evening. Ma'a salama.
Safety.
Number one,
cars and bikes stop at red lights.
It's against the law for car drivers or bicycle riders to ignore traffic signals.
So don't buzz through red lights. There might be a pedestrian or turning car that doesn't see you coming.
Number two,
Look first before you open your door.
Numerous bicyclists have been injured or even killed by car doors suddenly opening into them.
Look first, and bicyclists, stay out of the door zone.
Number 3.
Cross with the signal.
You are safest if you wait for a walk or green traffic signal.
Don't jaywalk. That's just walking into trouble.
Number 4.
Cars and bikes should stop for pedestrians in unsignalized crosswalks.
Be nice. Be legal. Be safe.
Brought to you as a public service by the Cambridge Bicycle Committee and this station.